Jim, it's budget day, it's the world of bonds, and it's Wednesday, the 3rd of March 2021. For professional investors only and never investment advice. We talked earlier this week about what might cause central banks around the world to panic about the rising government bond yields, and I thought the main reason that they might get worried was a tightening in what's called financial conditions, effectively the borrowing costs that companies and individuals face in the world that are linked to government bond yields at the end of the day to some extent. Now, last night, Lael Brainard, who's one of the Fed members on the FOMC, widely tipped to be the next head of the Fed after Jay Powell goes whenever he does step down from the Fed, she said the following: "I am paying close attention to market developments. Some of these moves last week and the speed of these moves caught my eye. I would be concerned if I saw disorderly conditions or persistent tightening in financial conditions that could slow progress towards our goal." Now, this is important because she's explicitly talking about the impact of government bond yields on financial conditions. She says that she's worried about them. She's echoed what came out of the ECB to some extent last week through Lane and Lagarde and others, suggesting they are worried about the state of government bond markets and the extent of a bond sell-off. But it doesn't suggest that they're immediately panicked. If you read the full text, she's talking about, you know, what might happen. But I think it is clear that if we see another big bond market sell-off, it is much more likely that the Federal Reserve and indeed the ECB do intervene. And we haven't yet seen any signs from the ECB. We talked about their PEP program and their ability to have intervened over the past few weeks, given the bond market sell-off and the fact that French government bond yields moved back above zero. They haven't yet done very much, given the scale of the flexibility that they have within their existing mandates. So it's really only been the Australian Central Bank that did panic and step into this bond market sell-off so far. But I think this is a shot across the bows from the Fed in that Lael Brainard speech that we saw. I think Powell is speaking later this week, so look out for that too. Still not huge moves in bond markets yesterday. I mean, equity markets were weaker, but we're still at 1.41% for the 10-year US Treasury bond yield. We're at 2.21% for the 30-year US Treasury bond yield. Gilts did rally, though. So we saw a 7 basis point rally at 10 years. So at 69 basis points there for 10s, and a much bigger rally at the area that's taken the most pain in the gilt market, which is the 30-year area. So 30-year yields back down by nearly 10 basis points to 1.24%. So it's budget day in the UK. It's been leaked as usual this morning what's going to happen, the main blocks of that, or at least some of them. So an extension to furlough is very welcome, I think, to most macroeconomists who would be very worried about the expiration of furlough in June had it gone ahead, given, you know, how many people are taking advantage of furlough schemes at the moment. So I think we want to see a stronger economy before that scheme is ended. So an extension to September for the UK furlough scheme, and an expectation there'll be some new deals for self-employed people who have had a fairly rough time of it relative to people who have been employed. So for the Governor Rishi Sunak, Chancellor rather than Governor Rishi Sunak, today is a bit of an opportunity for us to find out what his view is around, you know, thinking about choosing his fighter. Is it going to be the deficit myth where deficits don't matter, this kind of Stephanie Kelton view of modern money theory, or is it Reinhardt and Rogoff this time is different, and the idea that debt to GDP over 90% causes your economy to slow down? Remember, the UK is pretty much at 100% debt to GDP now. So are we going to have another decade of austerity like we had after the global financial crisis under George Osborne, which pretty much most people agree may not have been the best outcome for the UK economy, when we had this output gap that took so long to close? Should we not have been spending money to boost our potential GDP rate? Or is it a world where they do worry again about government borrowing? And Chris Giles in the FT yesterday put out an infographic that you can probably look up on Twitter if it's still there, showing the sensitivity of interest costs to the UK government from relatively modest rises in either interest rates or inflation. Remember, our interest rates go up. If interest rates go up, that impacts gilt yield, not immediately because of the length of our gilt exposure. You know, the average maturity of the gilt market is one of the longest in the world, over 10 years. But it will start creeping up if interest rates go up in the UK. And if inflation goes up, then the interest cost on our index-linked gilts, again, we issue more index-linked gilts than anyone else in the world as a percentage of our debt base, that will start going up as well. So the infographic models really what happens on a no change scenario, a 1% rise in rates and inflation, and a 2% rise in rates and inflation. And under no change in rates and inflation, by the end of 2025, we'll be spending around about just under £30 billion a year on servicing our debt. That's a little bit higher than it is today, you know, maybe just under £10 billion more than it is today. On a 1% rise scenario, that goes up to £57 billion, so nearly a doubling of that interest cost, and a 2% rise, not quite a tripling, up to £83 billion a year. So we're very geared to rises in rates in the UK. However, it is worth pointing out that even under those more extreme scenarios, and it's quite hard to see what would cause a 2% rise in either interest rates or inflation burden over the next 4 years, given the state of the economy that we're in now and a willingness by central banks and governments to allow the economy to run hot, then it's still a low percentage of our GDP or of our revenues. So not something to panic about yet, but we are quite sensitive to rises in interest rates. Finally today, story on Bloomberg about Denmark. Now, all of the Danish banks have just reported their Q4 results for 2020, and the final Danish banks have now started charging retail depositors for negative rates. Denmark went to negative really early on. I think it may have even been the first in the world. It was sometime in the middle of 2012. They did it really to stop the Danish krona appreciating against the euro, because there is a peg there that was quite important for the Danish economy, given how corporates and banks had borrowed and so forth. So they pegged to the euro. They wanted to protect that peg. But the euro was in more difficulty than Denmark, so Denmark moved to negative rates and have kept them there ever since. So it's nearly 9 years of negative rates in Denmark. Only in Q4 last year, though, did all banks finally move to negative rates for retail depositors. And even then, it's only on quite big deposits, so they're still protecting smaller depositors. So for instance, I think $16,000 equivalent is where it kicks in for a number of these banks. So still a decade on, they don't want to start charging depositors as a whole negative rates, but they are slowly moving in that direction. It's worth also pointing out you can take out a 20-year mortgage in Denmark at an interest rate of 0%. Right, that's it for today. Enjoy the budget. Speak to you either later this week or next week. Bye.